just by way of recap, the adventurers you've been introduced to here, each awakened in the mouth of what can only be described as a mega Tarrasque, perhaps the biggest, baddest magical abomination nature could have conceived of, and, you know, supersized, large enough to very comfortably swallow these, you know, full-sized humanoids whole, and for them to run around inside its innards with the inherent magic of the thing's nature rendering its insides essentially a pretty extended dungeon full of extremely dangerous traps and pitfalls, all kinds of things that burn or try to kill you or drown you. They have done an admirable job so far of making it through that. In fact, they have come across several members of a previous adventuring party who were shunted, literally, into the creature by the aforementioned witch. And that first party had a very rough go of it. The new adventurers, this party here, have been slowly kind of finding these different guys and healing them up, waking them up, getting them ready. Findar, excuse me, appeared having sight unseen, never met any of these guys. None of them ever met each other. But it seems that Findar has a patron. He's not a warlock, but a pretty powerful extraplanar being that he knows and is interested in unique items, stories, some kind of an astral griffin who, by one means or another, has snatched each of these adventurers from their respective homes and plopped them into this extra-dimensional adventure for themselves. Whether or not what happens here will affect them in the long run remains to be seen. And basically, the goal is to get out alive, mainly, and secondarily to find and help the first adventuring party regroup and potentially escape with a weapon capable of hurting the Tarrasque, and, of course, any kind of enemies that whoever possesses it may stand in their way. No small feat. And last session, our heroes survived literally the belly of the beast. Most of their time was spent in the stomach region, fighting against some bile oozes that tried to drag them into the belly juice and melt them down. Did quite a number on several of our members, but they managed to get out alive. In fact, they did a fairly impressive job of dispatching these creatures. Found a couple of clues, made their way a little further into the creature's guts. And so today, as I get our maps and things ready to go and situated, you all have come to the pancreas of this great creature. Having successfully slipped away from its, I believe it was the gallbladder last time that you guys almost ducked into, but it was full of these white blood cells, these killer cells that you had done battle with before, but never in these kinds of numbers. Findar, with a locate object spell up, is looking for the weapon that was described earlier. And so you avoid that encounter and make your way into the pancreas. And we left off last time with our heroes having caught a glimpse through a kind of permeable membrane, a sort of small kind of pulsing gap in a wall in the pancreas, into another room, a smaller chamber. Through that hole, you can see a mostly rotting corpse with an orc, a pretty beefy-looking dude who had been pretty badly wrecked. No chance of survival, definitely been dead for a while, but clutching a bag with a distinctly draconic kind of ambiance about it. It glowed softly, indicating a certain magical presence, but a quick perception check from Alriana, I believe it was, showed that the room was not unoccupied. The orc was not the only one there. A dire tapeworm had embedded itself in the flesh of the kind of ceiling of that room and was, by all observation, just resting, not moving, not hunting, but enjoying some peace and quiet. This is This is what the tapeworm looks like. This is the layout of the pancreas as you guys have explored it up to this point. The interior, it should be said, is still fairly dark, but you guys have several magical sources of light, more or less ongoing with the cantrips that you all possess. You have a pretty easy time of seeing where you're going, and you find yourselves at that almost porthole within. I don't think I mentioned last time. I told you guys that you could see it, but the descriptor for this hole here indicates that it is extremely close. It kind of pulsates in and out, varying in size by not a whole lot. It looks like a creature of the small size category would probably be able to fit. Oh, that's unfortunate. Would probably be able to fit through this passage, such as it is. But a medium-sized creature would probably need to really work to get inside without, or to get inside with any kind of grace. So, as we survey the room in front of us, the events that have led up to this point, warriors within the Tarrasque, what would you like to do?
Oriana, first we'll inform the rest of our party. I don't want to alarm you, but there does appear to be a rather large tapeworm up on the ceiling. I think it's the pancreas? Possibly? I would much rather avoid battle as much as possible, as we all have rather limited resources. But if it needs to come to it, I would much rather us be prepared. And GM, how far away is that bag?
One moment as I get my full-size map pulled up on my end, and I'll let you know. It is, excuse me, off in a, I'm going to go ahead and just say the northeastern corner of the room that orc's body is kind of jammed into a corner, and yeah, the bag was probably clutched when he was dying, but the hand itself has rotted away to a great degree, so clutching is not really something that the body can even do at this point.
So basically the opposite side of the room that we're at.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, so distance would still be helpful.
Get this full size map pulled up. Problem is, I have the hotkey for my communication here, and so, like, one hand pulling things up, zoom in.
While you're working on that, Oriana will turn to the rest of her companions and say, probably have to go deeper into this room.
Okay.
Do we wish to try to take the tapeworm by surprise and get as many hits in as we can before it tries to come back at us, or do we wish to try and be stealthy about this and to try and not interact with it at all?
All right, looking at the map here, it looks like your prize is a good, let's see, half, two and half. You've got about 30 feet of distance between where you are inside this larger pancreas chamber. The square where the gap is, where that blue line runs through and into the other room, that is kind of separated there. So you've got, you know, 2.5 feet, and then another 5 feet, another 5 feet, and then another 2.5 feet. So what is that? 15 feet total to get to that corner where the dead body is and the bag is. The tapeworm is above your heads, around, I think we said last time, it was about a 15-foot elevation, and it is curled up in like a reverse snake in a basket kind of configuration there. It seems to have coiled around. And I'll tell you what, anyone interested can give me a perception check to see if you can ascertain anything about the tapeworm as it rests.
I'd like to make that.
Yeah, and I guess I'll just have Alriana do that, since it is such a small space to be able to see through the gap. Not everybody is poking their heads through.
Wish I had Tauto back. 9.
Okay. With a 9, you look and you see that the tapeworm does seem to be, like, lodged, like, very comfortably wrapped around itself up there. You can't tell if it is holding itself in that configuration, if there's maybe a thin membrane, like it's lodged just beneath kind of the outer edge of that flesh. That is unclear, but it does seem, for the most part, like it hasn't picked up on anything that you guys have done yet. So,
all right.
What you'd like to do is up to you guys.
Igdri will motion with his lance and say,
if it would help to reach the item, my lance may give the extra length needed.
Actually, I was thinking about it, and now that I look at it, and Aurelius Quintus, and I can tell exactly how far away it is, I have another idea that might just work, and I will pass it by the rest of you first, before I do anything, so there are no surprises. And you watch as Ariana reaches into her bag, rummages around for a bit, and then pulls out some coiled rope, very faintly glowing. And she says, this rope, it's about 30 feet long. The bag is about 15 feet away, can't throw the rope that far, but... And you watch as she closes her eyes and holds out her left hand and then twists it ever so slightly. And you watch as almost an ethereal version of her hand lifts off and grabs the end of the rope. It says, mage hand, can move it 30 feet, wrap it around the loop of the bag, carry the rope over to the loop of the bag, loop it around the bag, pull on the rope, and drag it back to us. Don't need to enter the room, grab the bag, look at it, see if it's useful. Hopefully not be eaten by giant tapeworms. Thoughts?
Igdri will nod in agreement with the plan, but if there is room, he's going to position himself to keep an eye on the tapeworm so that if it were to move towards them, he could intercept it with his spear.
Tell you what,
Alriana,
give me an, we'll call it an arcana check, to determine how much you know about magical items or we can call it knowledge of what your mage hand is capable of.
Okay. That is a total of 27.
Okay. All right. It's something kind of tickles the back of your mind a little bit, and you know that instinct, the wizard's kind of scholarly intuition. You think about the way that mage hand works and the way a mage hand functions. It can, I believe, carry up to 5 pounds. Is that right?
A 10-4-5-E, actually. I just checked.
Okay. Very good. You also remember, 27 is very good, so you get kind of the full schmear here. You remember that the standard bag of holding has this enchantment that allows it to carry up to 500 pounds of material, but that it always, due to the nature of its construction, the magics that go into it, it weighs itself about 15 pounds. So tying the rope to it is doable with the mage hand. The rope doesn't weigh that much. But this is still going to be a 15-pound sack, possibly with other things in it, possibly not, but it will weigh 15 pounds one way or the other, that you're dragging through the room, just so that information is out there.
Okay. And yes, Orianna, originally when she had been thinking about this over the few seconds, but felt like a week, had originally thought about using Mage Hand to pick it up, but then realized that the bag would have been too heavy, and then came up with the idea of using the rope in order to just pull it back. Might be a bit heavy, might be able to lighten it a bit by pulling it up with Mage Hand. I don't know, but if nobody has any objections, that's what Orianna would like to try.
I like the idea, and I'm willing to see where it'll go. So, excuse me, as you cast your spell, as Mage Hand, ethereal, almost impossible to see except for its influence, carries the rope through the little porthole, snaking its way through the air, and of course kind of bowing at the bottom, it does begin to drag along the lip of this. I don't know what the better word than sphincter is, because it's not really a sphincter, but it is just this opening that keeps kind of pulsating a little bit each time. Valve? Vessel? I'm going to go with
vessel. Might work.
Valve? Good. Yeah, I think valve works better. So it's going through the valve. You manage to get it to where the bag is. 15 feet is not a great distance. In your planeswalking travels and your arcane knowledge being what it is, you've actually seen people capable of tying decent knots with one hand and mimicking some of those actions. It takes a little bit of time to get this knot put in place. And so I'm going to have you roll me a sleight of hand check against this creature's passive perception, its tremor sense.
He probably notices with a total of 6. Sleight of hand is not Ariana's forte.
All right. Magical elements being what they are, you notice as this procedure keeps going on, it takes you a couple seconds. Like I said, you can tie things with one hand, but it's not the simplest thing in the world, and you've not done it yourself, per se. As it's going, as the knot is getting closer to being completed, you notice that the tapeworm begins to shift a little. You see it kind of flex against itself, and you realize now that, yeah, it's not hanging down from the ceiling. It is actually kind of embedded in the flesh itself. The membrane is thin enough that you can see the tapeworm pretty clearly, but you watch it start to uncoil itself ever so slowly, almost as though if it had a big, wide mouth, it would be yawning as it's starting to uncoil itself and is awake. So as you complete the knot, I'm going to say you've got another action. What would you like to do?
Lauriana will whisper to the others and say, "Tapeworm seems to be moving. Let's see if we can get this and move back. It's probably too large to get through the opening that we're at." And Ariana would like to use the combination of just tugging the rope and lifting the, with as much force as it can muster, the Mage Hand, to just try and lightly pull the bag back towards them.
Okay. All right. Give me, this time, we'll say a... You know, I kind of like the idea of sleight of hand, because it is still you kind of operating, hopefully outside of this thing's notice. Unless you have another role you'd like to do it with, and if you've got a good enough reason, I'll be willing to go with that too.
I would like to see if we could go with Art. Go ahead.
Igdri is right there next to her. The tapeworm is waking up, correct?
Yes.
So he will try to catch her attention and motion towards the rope, like, if it's waking up, do you need help? And he'll just grab it and just yank the thing back through the opening. If Ariana wants the help.
It depends on how stable her hand appears to be, the arcane hand. Would it be possible for Ariana to use Arcana just to see how well she can manipulate the weave itself? Less so just pulling or pushing, but just nudging it in the right direction, preventing it from bumping. Just essentially a lesser telekinesis.
I'm down for that. You're really going to focus in on the academia, the execution, the process of this spell, as opposed to the, I don't know, magical anatomy of it. Sure, I like that. Go ahead and give me an Arcana check.
All right, that would be a total of 20.
There you go. With the 20, you focus in. You absolutely feel your connection to the bands of magic that permeate the entire plane. And it's interesting because doubling down like that, you do sense how this entire beast just pulses with this very raw, very kind of primal, underlying magical tone. But in this moment, you recognize your magical influence and you focus. You manage to bring it the last 10 feet without the tapeworm like dropping down, noticing too closely. Let me roll real fast. See. Oh, wow, a two. A natural two. So this, and it's now beginning to actually, like, you can see it coming loose from its coil, slithering weirdly along the ceiling, kind of slowly, almost inquisitively around the length of the ceiling. And you see that the very end of its tail, the place where it is sort of rooted to the ceiling, doesn't move, but it does manage to almost circle the entire room. This thing is a huge creature. And your very, very careful actions have brought the bag right up to this valve, this porthole. It comes up against the wall, and as you raise it up, I'll say that now that it's there to the edge, describe to me how you'd like to actually get it from the other room into your room.
So it has to get up and over the lip?
Yep. The valve is kind of, it's been up here at like, you know, face level almost. So it has a bit of a climb to get into where you are, unless someone wants to reach over and grab it.
I'm trying to decide if I should use this on it or not.
All right.
Okay.
The tapeworm's role to detect what you're about to do is loaded. I know what he's got waiting. So tell me what you'd like to do.
Okay. And I just need to get it up a certain distance and then pull it through the hole?
Yeah, I'd say about 5 feet off the ground and through the little porthole there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ariana is actually going to take a few steps back just to the point where she can just barely see the bag. She'll take a breath, and then you watch as her she focuses and imbues her mage hand with a bit more energy, and you watch as it seems to almost get not more solid, but a little bit stronger as she shifts the mage hand to the second level spell, Levitate, which can lift 500 pounds.
Nice. Very good.
And she is just going to levitate that bag up that 5 feet and then just tug on the rope.
All right. Go ahead and roll this as I'll leave it to you. You can roll it as Arcana if you'd like. The DC on that will be higher since we've used Arcana already. It can be a I'll let you pick. I want you to tell me what kind of role you think this justifies.
Is she trying to find a way to just ensure that the tapeworm doesn't see or doesn't react too much?
At this point, you realize that what you're going for is kind of keeping it from making too much contact with the walls of the room. The worm is now alerted that something is happening in the chamber, but it doesn't, you know, see per se anything inside to raise its ire like that. If it detects some significant movement, it's probably going to zero in on that. So we're trying to, I guess essentially just get the thing through the hole without disturbing it.
Okay. Oriana is going to take a moment and just focus in on the bag's location, the hole, the areas around it, anything that could cause it to bump or jostle, the awareness of the tapeworm. She's just going to see if she can investigate the closest location that she, or the finest point where she could get it to just the middle of the hole so it doesn't touch anything. Would it be possible for her to use investigation to see if she can find the best location?
Yes. I will allow investigation if you will acknowledge the mental mathematics that are going on, the like Sherlock moment of angle by dimension, by air resistance, by what's going to be required here. That sounds like investigation to me. This is a Sherlock moment.
Yes.
Sure. Absolutely. Roll that dice.
Total 12.
Ooh. All right. With a 12, you focus in. And, Mako, did you ever play one of those games as a kid where you're trying to use the, like, very, very weird, flimsy plastic fishing rod to place a little magnet on the mouth of a little plastic fish in a turning kind of a little electronic turntable type of game? Yeah. It's like the exact inverse of that. As you try to draw the bag toward the edge, you focus in and you've done the calculations. You've examined this within an inch of its life. You're focusing, you're drawing it. And as you go to pull, give it one good tug, magically tug it through. It comes through, but the strap kind of attached towards the top there. And you guys can actually see it now in the actual space itself, the space being roughly, you know, about 2 feet around. This bag is large enough that even centering it the way that you did, getting it as close as possible, it comes through, but some of the edges, and especially, yeah, the strap itself hanging down like it is in the air, just sort of swoosh, like a pair of like sweatpants as they slip by, and you hear a slight noise. The bag is now in your chamber. However, you hear, and I guess Igdri, you're a little bit closer to the porthole at this point. You can still see too. The worm whips its head around. The front end of its massive body kind of slips around. It doesn't come down. Again, it's still within the membrane there, but it does point itself as nearly as possible in the direction of where you guys are. It sees that something happened. It caught the motion, but it is still in that other chamber, and you guys have the bag. What would you like to do?
Igdri will remain there until they have gotten away from the hole, and then he'll retreat back.
Alriana will start getting away from the hole.
Okay. Everybody running?
Well, fast walking, not to the point where it's like, hey, let me jostle this area.
Sure.
But like just with purpose, away from that area.
All right. Walking with purpose, away from the hole where the big monster thing is inside. Absolutely. I can dig that. I'm going to need a group stealth check. Everybody roll stealth, please. We'll see how you do.
Do we actually care about being stealthy?
Well, I mean, you're describing like trying not to give it reason to come punching through the porthole and barrel into the room in which you are. You want to keep it focused on where it was. So, group stealth check. Vindar has disadvantage on stealth checks because he wears heavy armor. Gross. That's not good.
total of 19 on stealth, actually.
Ooh, Aureana has light feet. She is keenly aware of what's going on. All right.
So I'm tempted not to roll for Xavian, and then I roll a natural 20.
Hey, there you go. Well,
he doesn't care, but he's still stealthy anyways.
He cares so little that it's just effortless how stealthy he is in this moment. Like, it's one of those things where you recognize after the fact, I couldn't have actually done that if I was trying to, but because I didn't realize it was impossible, I did. That's what happens just there. Xavian just like moves from one corner, one side of the pancreas room to the other with no one even seeing him get there. And he is completely like unimpressed by his own feet. Findar clunks along. The other two, our one-armed priest who is at a severe disadvantage in most of what he's been doing, and our gladiator friend, who none of them rolled particularly well. So, altogether, a 19 and a 20, and then four of them with low 10, I think.
Natural 20? What was their total roll steal?
Looking.
Oh, total?
He has no points in stealth, so it's just adding dex, which is a 4, so 24.
Okay, so it was a crit success.
Yes, that was a crit success.
All right, cool. Very good. Then, 24, 19. Yeah, I'd say you guys managed to... You hear the weird slurping, clicking noises that you... those of you that saw the thing inside there, that its mandibles and fore jaws make as it kind of continues to examine the room. You even get the impression, Idri, as you're the last one to leave, you see it kind of get close to the edge there and kind of pause and examine that last spot that it felt something really bothering it like that. And with your 8, but watching the like effortlessness of some of the other guys making their way out, you slowly tiptoe away, and congratulations, you guys managed just barely to not alert the tremor sense of this colossal tapeworm. And you've got a pretty cool little prize there. As you pause to take a look at it, you see that it is a bag of holding, a classic bag of holding, but the face sort of similar to the way that Findar's bag has a kind of bird-like appearance on the front. This one has a more angular kind of reptilian visage on its front. You see that a lot of the leather is forged from the skin, not the scales, but the softer tissues of what was once a red dragon. And it does also glow with a kind of soft red light. Oh wait, excuse me. All the glowing I've been talking about, it... Yeah, actually. It is glowing with a very, very faint light. And Idri, as you get closer to it, it glows a teeny bit brighter. Just the tiniest bit brighter. As you fish around in its recesses, you pull out 100 gold pieces. You find a potion, fire resistance, a nice kind of glowing orange-red slurry in a jar, and 3 rather ornately decorated daggers. They all have a gem embedded in the hilt. Their style seems kind of reminiscent of the exotic-looking armor that Feyrom, your gladiator companion, wears. You sense that these are probably from this realm and from whoever the people are that Feyrom calls fellows. This bag, this draconic bag of holding, is now in your possession, and you find yourselves at the exit to the pancreas. Good job, guys!
Whew! Avoiding one battle. Ariana will turn to everyone else and say, who wants what? The money is no meaning to me. I'm not particularly a dagger person. The potion of fire resistance could be helpful, but we can keep that in the party group. Yes, and I would like the bag itself, but Igdri, I think it seems to have a bit of affinity to you. We could check that out.
Igdri notices that and is not sure why it's doing that. So he's interested in understanding why the bag is responding to him, but he does not know a whole lot about magical items, so it is very doubtful that he's going to figure that out on his own.
Well, and you hear Findar actually speak up. The trepidation on your face, Igdri, is enough that he kind of peers over. You see that he's actually kind of been waiting very patiently, almost like holding his hands behind his back as Orianna has been examining it. He says, if you don't mind, this actually is kind of my forte. And you watch him kind of adjust. You see him kind of move to almost like push some glasses up his nose, even though he's not really wearing glasses right now. And you see him kind of rub his temple a little bit, and golden light that you've seen him use when he's casting his divine spells glows on his fingertips. And as he rubs his temples, you see him look at this item kind of up and down and left and right, and he says, oh, well, this is fascinating. Now, my friend here, and he pats the bag at his side. My friend here is, of course, a very unique creature in the multiverse. But this... This is quite something. I like it. It doesn't seem to have any kind of voice to speak with. It's not of the same make as my saddlebag here. But if I had to guess, this thing would probably glow around just about anybody with a draconic background. It's some kind of warning system, I suppose. I'm willing to bet someone carried this who was a fan of knowing when dragons were around. Someone that didn't want dragons to get the drop on him. Dragon drop, that's fun. I'll have to keep that one in mind. And you see him just sort of getting really into examining the bag, like the stitching, and he starts to walk, carrying this thing in a direction that you guys came from. After a quick left turn, as you guys head back out the way that you came, and as he continues to sort of mutter to himself, handling the bag and appreciating some of the craftsmanship of it, he continues to lead you further until you guys find yourselves at a little fork in the road. He looks one way, he looks the other. There's one that seems to lead in relation to the direction you've been going, which is south, a couple dozen feet. There's one that branches off and goes west. And there's another that appears to continue going south. Now, Findar is not currently, he does not currently have the find object or locate object up. He's identifying this bag and having a grand old time of it, it looks like. So, if one of you would like to choose which direction you want to go, would you prefer to head west or south?
I'll leave it up to the group for a vote, but I say west.
Igdri is fine with that, and he would, as Findar is going on about the bag, as soon as Igdri realized that it glowed whenever it was around people of draconic heritage, Igdri would just lean over to Orianna and say, you can have the bag, but keep it away from me.
And Orianna's face lights up. Go ahead, you were going to say something.
Oh, and then he would leave it at that. So, if nobody is interested in the daggers, he would probably take the daggers, because it's useful to have something that you can throw.
Indeed. Orianna's face would light up, and she would actually turn back to the individual who's identifying it, and she would say, does this... I think I will keep it. Though, out of curiosity, does this light up even if the dragon is polymorphed, shape changed into something else?
That's a good question. It seems, and I'll just tell you, the way that it's described here, I don't think there's like an item card attached to it. The draconic bag of holding that's described, it just says that the bag functions as a normal bag of holding, but glows warmly when within 120 feet of a dragon or dragonborn, 240 feet if the dragon or dragonborn is red. It says what's within the bag. It does not go into any more detail than that. So, here's the question then. True polymorph, does it... It changes your creature type, right?
I know it doesn't in Pathfinder, but I'll have to check to see for 5e.
Easy enough to find out. I tell you what, I'll have you look that up while we continue describing where we're headed. The bag, Findar hands it off to each of you as you examine it in turn. You see him still kind of sort of chuckling to himself. Always a pleasure. You never know where you're going to turn up finding interesting things like that. And as you all seem to decide on heading toward the western edge there, he goes ahead and starts walking in that direction too. As you enter this room, you see a huge chamber that looks as though it's seen better days. The passageway is sufficient for each of you to make your way in comfortably. It's a good 6 or 7 feet high, basically just a doorway making its way in here. The fleshy ground below you has a certain crunch to it as you walk. Bits of dried cells flake off and kick up dust. Some kind of fungus grows over everything you see around you. And you see that there are actually two exits. They are next to one another, not too far away from where you're currently standing as you enter the room. Let me get you a map sent your way. All right, as you walk in, you take a look around, and anyone who wants to see if they can figure out what organ this is in game is welcome to roll a medicine check.
Would it be possible for me to use a nature check?
Yeah, sure.
Total 12?
With a 12, you scan the room, you see that it does seem like it's an organ that gets a lot of wear and tear. It feels like a lot of things probably come through here, that it has a certain quality of removing impurities, maybe. You find that it is very sizable compared to some of the other rooms that you've encountered up to this point. Putting these different facts together, you feel like it's pretty likely you're inside the liver of this creature. And realizing this, you kind of make the mental note that the regular consumption of all things unusual and magical have really, really done a number on this thing's liver. It has a natural healing to itself, but all things age, all things wear down, and this thing's diet has not been kind to it. So, it doesn't smell like alcohol. That's kind of one of the weird things. It's like, it's a creature made of just titanic levels of flesh and sinew and bone and all this stuff. But it's an anachronism, right? This thing is too big to really function. If I remember the lore correctly, Tarrasques are kind of the product of like mad science magic, if I remember right. So it must have quite quite the lifestyle, like finding things to eat, and maybe even something to challenge that would do a number on it like this. But of course, the liver itself, like I said, it's a place where things are, yeah, entire apothecaries at a time. Whole perfume shops, magical stores have been lost in this thing's bellies. Consequently, you look around, you don't really see like bones or the remains of armor. This room has a very noxious influence. And as you enter the room, I'm going to need each of you to make a constitution saving throw, because as you're entering, you start to feel very, very queasy, just extremely sick.
Would it be possible for the moment Ariana starts smelling like the room, like gets to the point where mm-hmm. it's like, we're still in the hallway, it's not smelling great, to essentially just have a reach into her bag, dismiss the rope, and reach out to pull out a cloth mask to just place on her face and just hold it there.
Got a mask up for safety. Let me check something real fast. How often can you use the minor conjuration?
Forever.
Okay. You can like dismiss it and reform it at will?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Disappears when you use the feature. If you take damage, or if it takes damage, I should say. Or after 1 hour. Okay. I guess I don't really see why not. I'll give you advantage on your constitution save with that mask on. If you're describing just a standard cloth mask. And I didn't see the rolls just then. Let me get back to where I was here. 19 for Igdri. Very good.
Xavian has a 16.
Okay. 14 with the advantage. Good. Findar rolls a 9, but he has resistance to poison as he is a dwarf. So 17 on the second roll. Much better. Ferom, the gladiator, rolls a natural 15. Very good. And our priest boy, also a dwarf, I just remembered. Look at that. Second time's the charm for both of our dwarves. Excellent. Yeah, you should definitely check and see what being a half-elf gets you. It is nice. There are a handful of racial traits that each one gets. Humans get a bonus feat at level 1, and it's very useful. Variant human is like the go-to build for Adventurers League so much more often than not. Anyway, all that to say, I think you all passed the con save. What was Xavian's again?
16.
Okay, yeah. So it was a 10 to resist the effect of the poisons. You successfully kind of shrug off the influence of this thing's noxious liver fumes, which don't smell so much like drinking alcohol as like rubbing alcohol. It is this very, very strong, overwhelming, overpowering kind of scent. But you all kind of shrug it off and feel okay. Looking around the room, you find that, yeah, no, there's nothing in here. you're in the liver looking around, and you notice those two exits, actually. They are the things that stand out the most here. You succeeded on your saving throw. You are immune for 24 hours to the effect. Literally none of you are negatively affected by this thing's liver poison, but the two exits are visible to you. On the map, you can see there to the south, one that glows with kind of a soft green light. Meanwhile, the other exit appears to lead it says there's a second exit, but I don't actually see it on the map. All right, there's only one real exit. You can see that there's a place where the lobes are separated. The liver is got these two, of course, complete different lobes to them. Yes, the green light is glowing down to the right of the liver as a whole. But yeah, this is weird. Oh, yeah, the exit, well, the one to the right is the way you came in, and the glowing green one down below.
And just to the left of the right entrance, it looks like there's an exit down.
Right, that's what, let me take a look at the map you guys are looking at. That'll help with something. I've got the big one over here.
Fiona would mention, we did come here looking for magical items and magical people. Perhaps looking at the green glow might be helpful. At least checking out what it is. It could be a magical creature that is unhappy, but that might be a risk we could have to, might have to take.
Ah, yes. Okay, so looking at the same map that you guys are, yeah, you've kind of plunked your way around the liver and found that everything is full of this, again, these dusty, flaky cells kind of coming and going. The stuff that comes through here is generally, I guess, more liquid in nature, and right now it doesn't seem to be processing anything major. Right, the entry that you came through is that area to the right, and the kind of snaking passageway downward is where that green glow is coming from.
After all Rihanna's comments, Xavian looks over at her. You magic people can see magic, can't you? Can't you just look around?
Unfortunately. Dropped that in order to pick up more fighty things. So, yeah.
Well, if we need to detect magics, I should be able to do that. I gotta make sure I keep up with all the slots that Findar is using out of combat. Yes, I should be able to pull that off. And
you have to prepare for today. If and Dalriana looks to everyone else, if you don't mind waiting a little bit, I think clerics can cast spells that they have prepared ritually.
Actually, I don't think I've got. Yeah, so he cast Identify ritually a minute ago, took his time kind of walking around with it, and so in that 10-minute time frame, he figured out the bag. But I don't see Detect Magic in my list of things I set up for Findar.
Wow. So it's not one of those essentially default cantrips that everyone gets and takes.
It's nope. No longer a cantrip, actually.
It is a first level spell. I'm sure, yeah.
Ew.
Yes.
Yeah. There are only a handful of... I mean, obviously, you can find ways to hack cantrips and make them awesome, but, like, by and large, yeah, if you're going to be a spellcaster, it really does end up becoming a matter of prioritizing. You can't always know what you're going to encounter at any given moment, but, yeah, spell slots and what you know going into things is very much a matter of priority. So, as of now, you guys don't have a magical means of, you don't have magical means of detecting what might be around the bend. However, you do have a fair bit of, you have some strength in numbers now. So if you're interested in checking out what's to the south, that's fine. But the passageway, you remember, outside the liver, also led in a southerly direction. So either way, you are making your way, you're going to end up making your way south in the grand scheme of things. But what would you like to do?
We could peek around the corner to see if there's anything rather nasty without putting our heads over there ourselves. I could figure something out for that.
All right. If you want to kind of venture in very cautiously, I would probably give you advantage on any kind of stuff that might be waiting to jump out at you. Not that there necessarily is, just giving you some idea of what we're doing here. Scroll up. Boop. Actually, down.
All right,
okay.
Adrian, yeah. Would you like to take a look? I would use Tauto, but he was melted by acid, so.
Igdri will step forward and take a look.
All right, as you step forward, you look around, and one of the things that being inside this creature has really kind of struck you with is the way that these different organs, these different sort of zones of its body, often seem to be naturally separated from one another. It isn't so much a quick and easy, we've moved from one organ into another in this really fluid fashion. It's almost as though the indwelling magics provide this sort of barrier, these distinct, you know, zones, these areas of you know, intelligent design, if it were. So as you enter this room, it's really strange. The threshold itself, you can look inside and see this sort of glowing green aura, sort of ambiance. But as you make your way into the room itself, once you've crossed that kind of threshold that you can see, you immediately are just slammed with the most noxious, like intense version of the smell that you smelled in the stomach area. This room is full to bursting. Not flush with, you're not swimming in, but nonetheless, it's just covered in bile, green, glowing bile. And as you enter the room, Igdri, you're not raging, I don't think.
No, he is not.
No, so you will take 1d6, 5 points of acid damage. And you, as you are, just by walking into the room, like assaulted by the smell of bile, and your motions as you enter the room, I'm gonna kind of speak for the module here. Your lance manages to disturb one of the little lobes in the entryway just enough that some of it falls down onto you, and you are considered covered in Tarrasque bile. You are disgusting in this moment. What would you like to do?
He will grit his teeth a little bit at the burn of the bile. But he is a kobold, and he's smelled disgusting things before. So he will go ahead and do a quick look over of the place, just to see if there's anything in here that he should stay for, or if he should just go ahead and leave.
Okay, go ahead and give me a perception check. And I won't impose disadvantage or anything, just because you came in here kind of steeled and ready for anything.
All right, that is a 15 on his perception.
All right, with a 15, you glance around. Oh, I haven't actually shared the thing with you. The map, I don't think. You make your way inside, and the room is not nearly as large as the liver was, but it would almost be beautiful if it wasn't so disgusting. The light is, like I said, a very bright green. There's like a almost a white kind of at the edges of this green light. And you look and you look. You do kind of come across this. You can see the body lying there. Just something that is already being so assaulted by this acidic bile's influence that you can't tell if it's the skeleton of a human or an elf. It was a medium creature at one time, but it has now been eaten away to almost nothing. There's no armor, there's no weapons, just the barest pieces of its bones. The little kind of stair step area there off to the side, you really don't see anything worthwhile there. It seems like it's just another kind of chamber extension of this thing's guts. Doing a job, sure, an important job, but not much to write home about. Nothing special in here, I'm afraid.
All right, then he is going to he's going to take a moment, nod his head, turn around and walk out.
Okay. All right, as you walk back into the proximity of your peers, who is closest to Igdri? Or to the entryway, I suppose.
I honestly haven't thought about it. There's a possibility that it probably was Orianna.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and say it then. As Igdri comes within 5 feet of you, Orianna, I need another constitution saving throw from you.
Would her... Two questions. Would her mask still be up? And would she be able to see him at 10 feet away from her? And see that he is visibly covered in bile.
I'll say either you can have advantage on the Constitution save with the mask being left on, or you can see that he's headed your way and covered in something gross and react accordingly.
I'll probably go with the first. Okay. The second. See that he's covered in something gross and say, "Oh, I am so sorry." And she is going to hold her hand out towards him and cast Prestidigitation to instantaneously clean.
Okay. All right. And Igdri, you feel this weird tingle kind of go across your body. I don't know what kind of, like, bathing habits Tengu practice, or kobolds for that matter. Why don't you tell me? What does Igdri think of when he thinks of bathing?
So Igdri was raised by his Tengu master. So he really doesn't know a lot of kobold culture. Mm-hmm. So he was raised to bathe almost ritualistically. It was seen as an aspect of their worship of the Raven Queen and a way of sort of purifying oneself before battle and things like that. Mm-hmm. So he's not dirty. He knows what it is to be clean, that sort of thing. And there is a lot to be said for keeping your armor in good condition. Armor, yeah, weapons, okay, and things like that. So that would be well cleaned. I mean, birds preen themselves and they use water to wash their feathers. And so keeping your armor and your weapons clean as well as yourself was seen as an aspect of keeping yourself in the best condition for the Raven Queen.
Very cool. So, as one who is at least familiar with the idea of going from disgusting to less disgusting, battle being what it is, you know how this kind of thing goes. What happens to you in this moment is not like that. It's very odd. The sudden feeling that a magical kind of influence, this outside force, is just kind of squeegeeing you without pressure from top to bottom, and you feel this goop that when it touched you, like, really burned quite a bit, but not so much that you lost your cool. The stuff starts to just roll down your body, kind of just pooling on the ground at your feet and sloughing off and eventually just kind of lying there stagnant, not hissing or bubbling in the way that the stomach acid did, but instead just kind of, that was on you? Gross. you feel the smell kind of subside a little bit. You don't feel the tingle in your skin anymore, and as you're, that's gotta feel better.
Ah, thank you. That is much better.
Congratulations. You guys solved my bile puzzle. Wasn't a puzzle at all. Just wanted you to get gross.
And Igdri will, without any further explanation, he will just begin to walk back towards the entrance.
Nothing interesting, huh? Ah, well. And
the other bile that was on him was glowing.
Yes, yes, it was.
We're like, that's probably what the glowing light was. Okay.
Yep.
If anyone asked him if anything was in there, his immediate response would have been, there was much golden treasure, but I decided to leave it.
Ferum and Big Rear, the two other adventurers there, they once they're convinced that their companion is not in there, they continue to move along as well. They've been pretty quiet this whole time. They're very intently kind of thinking through how to find and what to do when they find Suzanne. Findar falls in line, kind of follows Igdri's lead a little bit, and the two of you fall into a kind of a rough lockstep as you make your way back out the way that you guys came in. This time, turning right, headed out of the liver, having survived both the liver and the gallbladder, your next destination as you make your way, you enter a putrid chamber with a rough kind of 35-foot squarish shape. And as you approach this chamber, you feel a not so much a bright... there's like a wind, there's a heat, there is a even almost kind of a roar as you get closer, a noise that is just the whipping of wind inside. And making your way towards the entryway here, like I said, it's unclear to you as you're getting close exactly what it might be, but as you breach the entryway, you come in, and those of you that are at the front, Findar and Igdri, you encounter what can only be described as a whirlwind of acid, of fire, of air. There are all these elements kind of at war with one another here at the entryway to another system of organs. The way you come in is, you know, the quietest part of this room, but as I get this stinking map copied over, you guys look around yourselves, and it is tempestuous, to say the least. It is a furious storm that you can make your way through. You can walk through. It's not going to take you off your feet, but it's like walking through a sandstorm in a desert. There is particulate, and there is great heat pounding against each of you as you enter this chamber, this first chamber in the larger duodenum center of the body. I need everyone, as you're making your way in, to give me another constitution saving throw.
Before we do that,
yeah.
Before we do that, Igdri is going to... Well, first of all, can we see across this room? Do we have an idea about how far across it is?
Your lights are all still active. That is one of the cantrips that comes in handy. you can see within the room, but I'm going to say that since this is a room with like active elements of like distraction and really like pain on your part, you can see maybe halfway across the 35-foot span. So you can see a good 20 feet in, and inside where that kind of dark spot is in the middle of the map, that looks like maybe a place where this wind and stuff is concentrated.
Okay. Oh, and if down the hole the smell gets
heavy,
worse.
Heavy obscurance. What does that connotate?
Probably just look a little hard to see across. If the smell gets worse than it was in the liver, Oriana is just going to, like, scoff and say, oh, for the love of... And she's going to swap her cloth mask into a plague doctor's mask.
Okay.
Like I sense a theme here.
Yeah. So as you're going, this this pattern as it emerges. I will say that as you're coming in, like I said, I'm having a hard time kind of compensating for the way the thing is laid out. Things are supposed to happen every time you enter a room, basically. But yeah, as far as like preparations for what each room contains or like sensing it as you come, it is very much divided up into almost this like, every room is different, everything is special. That's kind of counterintuitive. And the Handwavium is, it's a magical beast. You go into a room and it's full of danger that you're just suddenly hit with and you gotta make a save. So yeah, if you have a kind of constant thing helping you out here, that is perfectly welcome. Let's see. It doesn't have any kind of stipulation in the minor conjuration about like the intricacy level of the thing you're conjuring here. So yeah, I think a mask that is specifically designed for something like just giving advantage on this save is going to be very useful at this point. And, you know, functionally, the cloth mask in the room where it was mostly smell is fine. But in this room, it's not so much smell. It is the fact that there is, like fire and acid being whirled around in this weird magical miasma that is extremely difficult to see through and very painful to move through. It's like a rainstorm, but the water is liquid fire.
Igdri is going to look to the others and say, I am going to try to get across to the other side. Anyone who wants to get into the bag of holding can ride with me.
Now that's an interesting idea.
That is actually rather clever.
And I actually still have bag of holding pulled up. A random location on the astral plane. Or wait. Sorry, that's putting the, that's when you put...
portable hole in?
Yeah, you stack your... your astral holes. Not great. Alright. Breathing creatures inside the bag can survive up to a number of minutes equal to 10, divided by the number of creatures within it, after which time they begin to suffocate. So, yeah, you guys have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people in your party. 5 in the bag means you would get 2 minutes to get across, heavily obscured, which means you're effectively suffering from the blind condition, it says. You're going to have to make your way the entire length of the room to the other side while tanking whatever damage you get from it. That is, it's not an insignificant amount of distance either. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 50 feet of travel. Okay.
Oriana is going to make a suggestion. But she says, this is actually a wonderful idea. Is it all right if I tweak it ever so slightly? I might be able to get across the room without taking any damage. I can't see where I'm going, so I'll have to hunt around a bit, but I might be able to do so. But I wouldn't be able to carry everyone unless everyone else is inside the bag of holding.
Is that a good use of your spells?
This is a good question. This could be used for something else, but I also don't want you to die.
If Igdri is the one who went in first and is reporting on what you found in the room, this is how I'm going to play it. He can go ahead and make the one constitution saving throw before he leaves the room to tell everyone what's happening so that not everyone has to make the save.
Okay, that is a 16 on his constitution save.
Okay, very good. With that, you take Where'd it go? 1, 2, 3. D6. Fire. 10 points of acid damage and... Wow. 10 points of acid damage and 10 points of fire damage.
Okay.
No, sorry. Excuse me. Sorry, I rolled that. It's half. You saved the you succeeded on the save, so half damage, 10 total. 5 okay. Fire, 5 acid.
Igdri is still. So while you're having this conversation, he is rather abused physically. He's down about a quarter health right now.
Yeah, let's see if we can fix that fast. And I don't think... I think it would be a little too dangerous to just go for it. We don't know how...
I think I would take healing if it is available, but I think I can make it across.
Ariana winces, then says... All right, at very least, if you are serious about doing this, please at least take the potion of fire resistance.
That does seem like a good idea.
Yes, that's actually a good question. Does it stack? Because he will be enraged when he does this, and he'll already have fire resistance.
Ah, then no, resistances don't stack. You can acquire an immunity. Really, really weird circumstances, but yeah.
Okay, then he will take it to appease Alriana's motherly heart and nod like he's going to drink it.
Okay. In the meantime, how bad did you say the HP was?
His HP, he needs... he's down to 33 out of 85, whatever that is.
Oof. All right, not insignificant. Very good. Then, yeah, I think, what does Priest Guy have in his sleeves? Let's find out. He knows Cure Wounds and can cast it at, we'll put it up at third or second level. He's got 3 of those slots. Let's roll a second level Cure Wounds from Begrir. He comes over, lays his one good arm on your shoulder and says, you've been taking quite a bit of punishment trying to get us through here. Don't think we don't appreciate it. He's going to... Oh, no. I don't want to save the link. I want to see how much I'm rolling. All right. Second level, so 2d8 plus spellcasting modifier, which is 3. So, I mean, that's 10 points of healing. You feel a little like juice kind of into your side as he looks at you with this like genuine appreciation. But you get the sense that this guy is operating at far less than peak efficiency. There are 6 members in the party. Two native NPCs and one extraplanar NPC, Findar.
Okay. Igdri will...
Steal the question.
Igdri will gladly take the healing and then wait for them to get in the bag.
Ariana will just give another quick warning. Says, please don't die. If you die, we all suffocate.
Alright.
I'm not a fan of this whole die idea at all. I'll find my own way across.
Oh. Okay, well that will change. And Pharom actually looks to you, Xavian. He's been kind of watching how you've been holding back and being very, very cautious. And he sort of nods to you. He says, I greatly appreciate what you all are doing here. And I think I like his idea better. If no disrespect, Master Idri there, if you don't make it, someone's going to have to be able to make a mad sprint to get that bag picked up to get you on the other side. I'll stay out as well. I'm feeling much better than I was before. So that means we have three in the bag and three outside the bag. So each of you three that are getting in, clamber your way inside. And
before everyone gets inside, I'm looking at my character sheet again and realize that Xavian hasn't been healed since the last couple combats. Any of the clerics have available healing still?
If you kind of catch Findar before he goes into the bag, he'll give you a... Yeah, he's got a couple of cure wounds left. His slots are...
Xavian is exactly bloodied.
Oh.
Oriana would ask, how about this? Let's get across the room, and then we can just take a quick short rest. I think we could all use it. If we are planning on doing that, I can make your journey across much easier, Idri.
Idri, do you accept the whatever it is?
He is annoyed at everybody being so ridiculous about this. and it's taking far too long than it should have. But he is not the kind of person to make a big deal about things. And so he'll just... It's almost a nod like he's given before, but it's also almost a shrug. And he'll go along with whatever the party does.
Okay. Oriana will wait until whoever wishes to get in the bag gets in the bag. She will also get partially into the bag. And she will say, you'll have a minute. But during this time, you'll be a little bit slower, but you won't be able to take damage. And she is going to basically stick her hand out of the bag as she casts Resilient Sphere on him. While you are inside the sphere, nothing, not physical objects, energy, or other spell effects can pass through the barrier in or out, but a creature inside the sphere can breathe. The sphere is immune to all damage, and the creature or object inside cannot be damaged by attacks or effects originating from outside of the sphere. You also can't do damage out of it as well.
How long did you last?
Concentration up to a minute, so 10 rounds.
Gotcha.
But you can take a use its action to push against the sphere walls and roll the sphere up to half your creature speed.
Okay.
So just hamster ball it.
Yep. That. I was going to say that with the fire and the acid and everything, with it being heavily obscured that way, I was going to be treating it as half speed, regardless, kind of difficult terrain plus. So that offsets that pretty well, actually, if he's accepting the if you're accepting the hamster ball of invulnerability, yeah, you're going to be moving at half speed, but you will be resilient all the same. So is everybody set? Everybody that's going to be getting where they're going to be getting.
What did Findar roll on his heal?
Right. Findar cast a third level cure wounds and heals you for 18 points of damage. Or 18 points of health, I should say. Sure. Glad to help. All you have to do is ask.
Should be enough. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. And he pops back down into the bag. His head disappears below the line of the mouth there. It's very funny, of course, seeing everybody get into the bag. It's not so simple as Newt Scamander stepping into a suitcase. The entry hole of the bag is like 2 feet across. So for the broader shouldered types like Vindar, it's very much a matter of like finagling your way in and squeezing just so, and then turning at just the right angle and, you know, ending up flopped down in this liminal space. And so we kind of transition into a split party scenario. Inside the bag, you find a room that is... This is the Draconic bag of holding, right?
Indeed.
Okay. Oh, this is going to be fun. All right. Spitballing here. In this space, you find a room that is lit by this kind of soft... light, a yellowish, almost like an old, a very old light bulb kind of color, as though it were a constant firelight with no flicker to it whatsoever. It is very similar, in my mind's eye at least, to the Soul Realm from Avengers Endgame, where there's not really a room to speak of. There is a sort of just expanse around you, but you get the sense that there is almost nothing here around you. No seating, no pavilions, no anything. This bag was made, of course, to house things in this extraplanar space, but that some small aspect of its of the dragon that it was made from may have persevered a little bit. There's this kind of heat in the air. You begin to not sweat, but just feel very uncomfortable in the clothes you're in, no matter how lightweight or heavy they are. This is not a pleasant place to be, and it is eerily quiet. The shadows that you cast are almost like a hazy smoke on the ground around you, and they shift as though there were dancing firelight kind of right above you, but the light itself does not seem to change. And it's perplexing. It's spooky. But you can breathe. You're on your feet. You're on what appears to be fairly solid ground. Nothing crunches. Nothing crackles. Nothing makes any sound as you walk. Just the kind of gentle footfall sound of you guys meandering around the room. Outside of the bag, Igdri, as you kind of hold the bag, clutch it, you know, football running back style, and fix your lance to yourself, holding it just so the resilient sphere does not interfere with its being in your grasp. You take a tenuous step forward on this slightly curved edge of this this dome on the inside, and you feel the whole thing kind of move with your weight in the direction that you are leaning. You push ever so gently beyond the threshold of this magical passageway between these two organs, and suddenly you're back in the room. The maelstrom of red and hideous yellow, noxious yellow kind of flashes that pass by you in these slashing, swirling motions are terrifying. But to someone like you, they're also super interesting, very fascinating. A new vision of what could be completely deadly, and yet, you know, just one more stepping off point, one more passageway to a worthy warrior's eternal rest if they were unfortunate. You make your way in and you have the option to begin moving your full distance.
Once they're all in the bag, he will allow himself just a moment of annoyance, because this is not nearly as heroic as what he wanted to do. But he's inside the ball and there's no damage taken, so he will proceed to just walk. And okay. He can go at half speed, it'd be 20 feet around.
Okay. All right.
Once Igdry starts to move, Xavier will take a runner stance and then just sprint across, also using Step of the Wind to just clear the area as quickly as he can.
And you can move the full 55 feet, right?
Your base
speed is like 40, right? 45?
Base speed is 45.
Okay.
Running then would give 5e. Is it times 4 or is it different for 5e?
I believe it's times 2. It's basically, it's a double move. So, you cover the distance for sure. But you will be pummeled by this swirling maelstrom of punishment. So.
Sure. You just watch one round of that, not multiple.
Completely understandable. You will take 3d6. Actually, you roll a is there a save? Yeah. Constitution save to see how well you stand up to the punishment.
That's not looking so hot. Constitution 14.
Okay. You go into this sprint feeling extremely confident, but with every step, this stuff hits you harder and harder and harder, and you feel the full effects of this first duodenum chamber, which, you know, those of you that know anything about medicine, the duodenum is going to be a part of the essentially the intestinal system. This is one of the first steps towards being, you know, destroyed, broken down to the point that your nutrients can be absorbed and used if you are a food item. This thing is clearly meant to do its job well. You take 6 points of acid damage and 12 points of fire damage. Full damage. But you do make it to
the knocks off Findar's healing.
Do what?
It matches Findar's healing.
Well, there you go. So you're back where you started at the beginning of the chamber, at least. All right, making your way through. You lead the way. And Pharaoh actually kind of hunkers down. He is sorely missing the spear that he usually carries. You see him kind of gesture like he's going to run with it in his hand, but then he realizes it's not there. He is going to try and double move through this horrible, horrible place. And his constitution saving throw is also not quite enough. So he is going to take 1, 2, 3. You watch him kind of trying to keep pace with you, but he's a fighter by trade, a gladiator, not nearly as light on his feet. So he takes 12 points of fire damage and another 11 points of acid damage. Yeesh. 23 points of damage as he just barrels his way through this room. You hear him cursing in a language you don't understand. It has the lilt, kind of the vibe of Elvish, but the construction of it and some of the kind of rougher edges of what he's saying, it makes it impossible to really tell what he's getting at. But you can tell he's definitely cursing, as that pain is not insignificant. Idri, you've made it about halfway through this this room. Quick question, Alriana. For this resilient sphere, is it your concentration that's maintaining it?
Yes.
And if so, does your can you maintain concentration like that from another? You are on the astral plane.
Yep.
I believe, or at least you're in a pocket dimension here.
Yep.
So okay, so it still works. Great.
Yes.
Then, trying to think, looking around, I don't think there's any reason for you to have your concentration shaken. You guys have made it. One round has passed. The air is still fine. If I were more creative DM, I probably would have come up with some weird something hiding inside the bag to give you guys a run for your money. But at this point, I think it's safe to say the concentration is maintained. So, Idri, what does the last half of the room bring you?
He just keeps walking. He watches the other two run on ahead and knows that they're hurting, which he can't feel, which annoys him more. Because he's just walking in a hamster ball.
He is a barbarian who has literally been put in a cage and told to stay calm and walk carefully from one corner of an extremely dangerous situation to another. He is very understandably frustrated. Well, I mean, No, I'm not going to do that to you guys. Okay, with that in mind, I was thinking maybe it might be time for a killer cell roll. bodily defenses engaging. But no, this room is bad news enough, and you guys found a pretty clever way to work around it. With that time spent, with that spell expended, you guys find yourselves on the other side of the first duodenum chamber. And Idri, as you continue to kind of just, you know, walk your way down through that passage and out to the other end, you leave the roaring, raging inferno behind you. Pharaoh falls in behind you and silently kind of brushing some of the singe off of the edges of his long hair. He follows you as you make your way further down into a fairly extended passageway. There's a further southerly direction that you go before winding east and then north again as well. As you take these gentle, slow steps, you get several steps beyond it, and you no longer even hear it. So you're out of harm's way. What would you like to do?
Once we reach a spot that looks like it's fairly safe, and we could probably have a short rest or something like that, Idri will just drop the bag to the ground. And flap open, and then he'll just walk away a little ways and sit down to wait until the spell ends.
It only lasts at most a minute.
Okay, so with that careful gingerly step you've made, six rounds, you're all right. You open it up, and the extra dimensional space that Findar and Alriana and Bigreer have been just kind of milling about in for what seems to you guys like just a couple of moments. I mean, it really is less than a minute. You land, you sort of get your bearings, and before you know it, it's almost as though I guess it makes sense if that's how the haversack thing, the portable hole thing happens. You see a kind of shimmering passageway appear before you, almost as though someone had raised the flap of a tent. And Findar, recognizing this for what it is, starts marching up to it. He kind of taps on Begrier's shoulder and leads him toward the exit. And they disappear from your sight, Alriana. They make their way out and back into your sight, Igdri. Alriana, it is your choice what to do here on the astral plane, if anything.
Alriana will just simply follow, but making note that inside of the bag is actually rather interesting. She can set a few things up. It could be a very interesting way of staying. But for the time being, she will come out. And she will say, right, you all seem to be okay. And she looks over at the others and sees that they are burned and acid marked. And she just winces a bit, realizing that the amount of damage they took probably would have killed her. So, yeah. She's like, is it okay if we take this just a short rest for the moment?
That sounds fine to me. And you see several of the others kind of nod and wince a little bit. You guys do have your full complement, or excuse me, not your full complement of hit dice back, but that long rest that you were granted as a boon of the Astral Griffin did restore some of that to you. If you guys would like to take this time to get your hit dice and things in order for a short rest, that is fine.
I would.
Sure. As you do that, we're going to take a quick break. We're not going to go super long tonight, so we're going to get back to this and keep making our way forward through some of the remainder of the intestine. But I do want to just quickly check in, make sure everything's going well outside of here, if the baby needs any help or anything. But we'll be right back. I will be listening, so have fun with your short rest.
All right. Ariana's going to spend 2 hit die to get herself back up to full. And at the end of this short rest, she is going to use Arcane Recovery to recover that 4th level spell slot that she just used.
So is there limits on how hit die can be spent? Like, does each action take an amount of time, or can you just do whatever?
I'm not sure I follow your question.
So, like, recovering a spell slot for the wizard... could you spend all of your hit die and get back how many spell slots?
It's just once per day when you finish a long rest, you can choose to expended spell slots to recover, and you can only do it once per day. So she did it, and it's done.
So it's not spending hit die to do that.
Oh no, she had taken damage from the acid. Spending hit die to regain the spells would have been ridiculously awesome, but yeah, only once a day. And it caps out at recovering up to a maximum of 6th level. Oh, sorry, up to a maximum of 5th level. None could be 6th level or higher.
Now I gotta remember what the hit die for a monk is. D8, maybe? Yes, D8. And as I recall, we recovered all of our hit die, because none of us spent that many.
Indeed.
So when spending hit die to recover, do you add con, or is it just straight brawl?
Actually, I think you do add con.
Yes, you do.
In which case, Ariana only spent 1 hit die. She did not need to spend the 2nd. How opposed would everyone be to, instead of taking a 1-hour short rest, taking a 2-hour short rest? Orion would really like to get her familiar back, but it is a 1 hour casting time.
Xavian would be getting restless, that's for sure.
Yeah, Igdri would be restless to wait that long, but he would be willing because he is a quiet soul and doesn't usually voice his opposition.
Okay, I am back.
Unless he's...
You're talking about a 2 hour short rest, is that right?
Essentially, yes. 1 hour short rest and then another hour for Orianna to resummon her familiar.
But 2 hours in the same general location without moving on.
Would anyone, if anyone was like, we could probably keep moving, Orianna would say, all right, because she wants her familiar back, but she also realizes these rooms are deadly. And if they step into another acid or poison room, she loses her familiar again. It's incredibly useful, but if it can't survive.
Do we have a new map of the room we moved into?
Currently, you guys are in essentially the passageway, the slight passageway. On the big map, it's a pretty long, narrow, just wide enough for you guys to make your way through. Passageway between the first and second chambers of the duodenum. So you're not actually in a room right now. You're just in a, for lack of a better term, like a hallway.
So
no visible threats as of right now. Although that might change. Nope. Not if you're just taking one short rest. It does not.
Yeah. And Steel, remind me of your character's name.
Xavian.
If Xavian was like, I'd like to get moving, Orianna would say, okay, I can understand that, and we can move on.
The sooner we're out of here, the better.
All right, let's go.
Okay, so no additional short rest, you guys... take the time to get yourselves healed up a little bit. I will click short rest for Findar on D&D Beyond. That's one quick short rest. Is HP looking good? I don't think he gets spell slots back.
It's mostly a wizard thing.
Yeah.
But I think Xavian gets his key back.
Not that you'd actually spent any. Or actually, no, he did. He, Step of the Wind once, yeah, so. Forgot to mark it, and now I don't need to mark it.
Okay, so with that in mind then, you guys finish up your short rest. Those of you that needed a bit of recuperation have done so. And as you continue making your way forward further into this creature's bowels, its guts, you come to the next major kind of delineation between the hallway that you're in and the next chamber. Let me get you the link. I guess we can do it this way. Who would like to venture into the next chamber to see what waits on the other side?
Not Orianna.
Sure. Findar does have full health, so if everyone else is a little bit trepidatious, he can do it. But... yeah, I wouldn't want to deny anyone interested in that kind of glory the opportunity to step up if they wanted.
Xavian still has no interest in point.
And Pharaoh definitely respects that. Excuse me. Oh, Quicksilver's still gone, actually, so I think this one time I'm going to go ahead and, for sake of time, Findar will poke his head inside and give you guys an idea of what he sees. Did I post the map just now? Do you guys see it?
I don't.
Okay. Oh, yep, okay. I copied it. I didn't paste it in yet. All right. So, Findar goes across this little threshold here. I guess we can just think of it as like the interior of Monstro in the original Kingdom Hearts, where you can't like see into the next room as you're going from one room to the next, but as you go in, whoever does enter first will be exposed to whatever lies there.
I was thinking Jabu Jabu's belly, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, also good. Yep, good comparison, absolutely. So, Findar steps in. Igdri is also welcome to jump in line, of course, first. The way I'm going to play this, going forward, is we're going to treat it like a video game kind of thing. One person can lead the way into the room, or the entire party can if they want. But if one person wants to sort of test the waters and see, then come back and report on it, that's fine too. Not everybody has to end up making a ton of constitution saves, but somebody does to maintain kind of the flow of what we're doing here, if that's how it's going to go.
Yeah, we could have a short discussion about who is the best at resisting poisons and such, and if we're like, Igdri, you seem
Igdri
to be
will
nice.
Just go in.
Yeah. Like, do you want my mask?
Igdri just goes in.
Okay.
Nice.
Finda will actually join.
She's putting her mask back on.
As Igdri forges ahead, Findar will fall in right behind. He has, of course, poison resistance. And he also feels fairly responsible because it's his patron that's yanked you guys to this place. So as the two of you enter, Igdri, you look around and you see that this foul chamber that you've walked into is not the kind of terrifying hellscape that the last one was. In fact, this one is almost eerily calm, 35-foot square, so very similar in shape and layout, at least, to the last one. But a pool of oily gray sludge appears to bubble up from the center of this chamber. It's very hard to ascertain anything about its depth. You can only really see that it's got these gurgling, burbling bubbles coming up, and that it is this oozing, oily gray color. Very opaque. You can't see into it from where you stand. I did post the map, so you're coming in from the southwest entrance there, and the oil pool is the greater majority of kind of pretty much everything beyond that initial couple of steps. Let me do this. So I can see the squares that are indicating what we're looking at here. Yeah, okay, so it's got... Well, that grid is weird. This is supposed to be 35 feet. So... Okay. That first little, spur that goes off to the left there does not have the oily pool feeding into it, but you can see that main body in the center area there. That is almost all submerged. Beyond it, with the light of Findar's hammer glowing, you can catch just sort of towards the edges of where that light reaches, these other two from where you stand right now, looking northeast, you see those two entrances into those caverns, although you can't see all the way back in there. The main thing you can see is, again, this big sheet of gray, oily ooze out in the middle of that chamber room. So, Igdri, you see what you see. Findar sees it as well. What would you like to do?
Igdri is going to reach into his pack and pull out just some trail rations. And he's going to chuck some of the food into the pool to see if it reacts like acid and begins to decompose it.
Okay. You toss this little chunk of like jerky or hardtack, whatever it is, just kind of like a biscuit, into the pool. And sure enough, as it makes contact with the liquid, it starts to dissolve in a very kind of sickly, not like butter on a pan, but more like butter on like concrete, I guess. If you were to drop, like, I'm imagining something like dropping your ice cream cone on a parking lot. It's the most like, there's a splattering kind of action that happens as this bread makes contact with the acid, and then it just starts to like slowly and quietly just sink in and spread out as its internal consistency starts coming apart, and soon the biscuit like remnants are pretty much completely gone. Very, very little time. Findar kind of looks to you, says, well, that certainly doesn't bode well. Ugh. We did seem to have to touch it, though, for it to be a problem, so I suppose we'd better let them know what we're looking at here. I don't see any other way forward than to get around that corner. Who knows where that other cavern over there leads? And, unless you have any other ideas, I suppose we better tell them what we've seen here. Or actually, he'll just kind of lean back outward, sort of out of the dividing line there. He'll say, it seems like everyone's safe to come inside. There's some major acid that we do want to avoid touching, but it seems like we'll be all right to at least group up here in the room.
That's good to know. It's very dangerous acid.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone have suggestions on how we get through the room and across?
You see Farom kind of just look apprehensively at everybody. The Greer shrugs with both shoulders, with one arm raised, like, I'm already so out of my depth, it's not even funny.
Is the acid only on the ground, or is it also on the walls and ceiling?
No, this is a pool of acid. The walls, it looks like, are actually kind of similar to the musculature that has been all around you as you've been moving through those passageways. It looks like this is just a large chamber with some, I mean, it is the intestine, so it's going to have what, like alveoli kind of lining it. There's like a almost like a shagginess to the walls. They're not like arm-sized polyps, but it is almost like looking at the fronds of an anemone, but an entire room covered in that kind of surface.
Does anyone have do we know if it only burns like flesh? Do we know how it reacts with, say, like wood?
Well, the only thing we've tried was some rations from Igdri's pack. So, organic, but not flesh?
Okay.
Not sure about wood, or metal for that matter. I doubt it'll be good, though.
Indeed. I have some thoughts, but I'd like to hear other people's suggestions first.
Do the walls look like something that we could climb?
You just missed. We described the walls as being... It is an intestine that you guys are in, so this wall... These walls are covered in. You couldn't see it in the first chamber, but essentially what amounts to like alveoli, these almost like short like fingers. I described it as being kind of like the fronds of a like an anemone, but an entire room where every inch of the ceiling at the very least and most of the walls is just covered in that stuff. To climb would be a very strange experience. You don't know how these polyps, these extensions of its intestine would react, but you're welcome to find out, to try.
I have a thought on how I can get myself across and maybe a few others, but it is not very heroic.
Oh. Well, heroism is all well and good, but I'd be curious to see what you have in mind.
Well, I had used the levitate spell earlier, and you can either choose an... a person or an object, and you can simply pull yourself along the ceiling or walls if you have an object. Now, we don't really have an object that's large enough for us to sit on or ride on, but I can also fix that too. I can just make, say, a small 3-foot box for us to sit in, levitate the box, have someone to use, and she pulls out her quarterstaff to essentially row yourself along the walls until you get to where you need to be. And then, well, I would... Well, no, I can't destroy the box because I need the box. We need to get the box back somehow. But that is a thought.
I tell you what. Igdri, you are the first one that came into this room. You're the one that gave it the initial once over. And I imagine you would be paying more attention to your surroundings than you would really kind of the ideas that are being floated here. Is that a safe assumption?
Yes.
Okay. Roll me a perception check. And I'll say, Xavian, you can roll one as well, since your whole shtick right now has been hanging back and watching what else is going on.
Being paranoid?
Yes. You roll perception as well.
Nat 20!
Ooh! Lovely. On Igdri with a 16. as Alriana continues to hypothesize... to plan. As Svendar listens intently to what she says and kind of floats in his own mind how that might look, what might happen there, goes through the steps. Xavian, you see it first. You see the bubbles that have been kind of oozing up through this sludge start to come faster. Igdri, you hear the noise of these bubbles start to pick up. It catches your attention, you turn. And before your very eyes, both you and Xavian see, almost at the same time, a head. A reptilian head start to snake its way up from this pool of acid. And then another head. And another head. You watch as several of these heads continue to rise above until five heads are visible. You see that they're drawing closer to you. You see a kind of lazy shuffling motion headed, I shouldn't say toward you, toward the chamber there to your left. It looks like it's headed in that kind of vague direction. And gonna roll real quick. Okay. It does not see you in this moment, but a fully grown, huge hydra that was previously just resting in this pool of caustic acid is now making its way, unbeknownst to it, towards your party, dripping acid as it goes, licking its chops lazily, one head yawning as though it just woke up from some kind of nap, another head very obviously wide awake, kind of looking about. And, Igdri, with that message, I feel like your energy is just, you're always on, right? Like, you're always kind of looking for this kind of thing to happen. And that's probably why on its second perception check, since you all entered this room, that head, the one that remains wakeful at all times, at least this one, with its turn on guard, rolled up a 19 plus 6 is 25 to just notice that you all were standing there in its domain. And the one head whips around, sets its eyes on you, Igdri, and it's the flesh around its jaws peels back. You see rows of sharp pointed teeth and a tongue that begins to loll out as it glares at you and utters a ferocious That's where we'll pick up next week.
All right, you guys.
Entered the lair of the Oxahydra. The second duodenum chamber. You guys have a big fight next week.
Definitely. All right. Looking forward to this.
Yeah. Start out by rolling to see if the characters know how to stop the heads from respawning.
Simple. You just cut them off, right?
A very valid question and concern.
Yeah, I think you have to cut them off as fast as you can. You know, sounds just like fun. Keep cutting.
I don't think any of you guys really operate with slashing weapons now that I think about it. Everybody in the party is either a caster or a bludgeon weapon person. And Igdri, you operate with a lance. Faram, the fighter guy, has a spear, or he had a spear. Yeah, I don't think anybody has like a sword to speak of. At least not so far.
We now have three nice daggers.
Something to consider. Yeah, but if you're going to use daggers for slashing, that's like a whole other thing. They're normally going to be like piercing throwing weapons. But, you know, it is entirely up to you how you decide to approach this fight. The six of you all versus a huge monstrosity that is right at home in the belly acid, the digestive juices of one of the biggest, baddest creatures in the world. I can't wait to see how you guys handle it.
Yes.
You did a fine job making your way, snatching up a new prize, making your way through a truly furious corner of the intestines, and now coming into another important zone. So that's good.
Intestines literally on fire. That's gotta hurt.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I don't doubt it in the least. Oh hey buddy, hi buddy. Are you waiting for your nap? It's basically gonna be feed you and go right back to bed. All right. Anyway, okay, fellas. Thanks for joining us. He popped out a little while ago, it looks like. That's okay. Look forward to seeing how everything goes next time, fellas. Have a good night.
Indeed.
Indeed, yes. Sleep well. Have a great night.
Later.